from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Supreme Court heard arguments today over whether immigrants can be detained indefinitely while awaiting deportation hearings. Approximately 400,000 people a year are detained by federal immigration officials, some for more than a year while fighting their deportations. The American Civil Liberties Union says that's unconstitutional and filed a class action lawsuit requiring bond hearings to be held within 6 months. The case is being watched especially close because the outcome could affect President-elect Trump's immigration policy. Joining us from Washington is Julie Smalls, a reporter for KQED News, who has been on top of this story. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Let me also welcome Kevin Johnson, who is Dean and Professor of Law at Chicano Studies at the University of California, Davis. And welcome to the program, Kevin R. Johnson.
Thank you, Michael.
Let me begin, if I may, Julie Small, with you. And this case stems from an American Civil Liberties Union case about 1,000 immigrants back in Los Angeles, 2007, Jennings versus Rodriguez. Can you maybe just give us sort of a good, quick outline of that case and where we are now and what this, what's going on with the hearings that you were at?
Well, the case that was brought in this Southern California was about for a person who was being detained. He was a lawful permanent resident of the United States. He committed a crime, a minor drug offense, and he also had an earlier offense where he was for joyriding when he was younger. But under our congressional statutes, that made him deportable. At least the government thought so. And he was taken into custody, and he ended up being in custody for 3 years. And the whole time he was trying to get an opportunity to have a hearing before a judge so that he could be released to be with his family while an immigration decision was made about his future. Finally, when this case went through, basically what the ACLU won for people in his situation and also people who come to the border who've also been apprehended and detained is the right to a hearing after 6 months. If you've been detained for 6 months, you get a chance to go before an immigration judge and plead your case that you should be released while the government decides whether you get to stay or be deported. And that enabled this man, Alejandro Rodriguez, to actually get out of out of immigration detention and resume his life. And lower court upheld, passed this injunction forcing the government to provide these reliefs for everybody in the class. And then it was the government appealed it to the Ninth Circuit. And the Ninth Circuit upheld the lower court ruling. So that, also spread this right to the hearing after 6 months to the entire Western Coast, to every state that's in the Ninth Circuit.
So you were at the arguments today. You're at the Supreme Court right now, in fact. Please give us a sense of what you heard and what you're able to absorb from that.
Well, it seemed to be that there was a consensus among the judges that a hearing is important and there ought to be a right to a hearing in a reasonable amount of time. And I think that's where the similarities end. Veteran reporters who cover the Supreme Court said this argument was a mess. The justices were all pursuing different solutions and angles, and it was very difficult to see how they're going to decide this and even which way they're leaning. But there was a lot of, do we fix this by modifying the congressional statutes? Is it okay for courts to interpret these congressional statutes in a way that provides people this kind of bond hearing and opportunity before an immigration judge or not? Or should we follow what the government says, which the government says, well, there is a way for people to get a hearing, and that's they can apply, they can file a habeas corpus petition in federal court and try to get relief that way. But as the attorneys for the ACLU, the attorney for the ACLU argued, that's a kind of meaningless form of relief because it takes up to a year for a petition like that to move forward. And when you're talking about somebody who's already been detained a year or two or three, that's not going to help.
Julie Small, with us from the nation's capital, reporter for KQED News. She's at the Supreme Court right now. And let me go to Kevin R. Johnson, who again is Dean and Professor of Law and Chicano Studies at the University of California at Davis. It would seem at this point, Dean Johnson, that we're likely to see a 4-4 split and Anthony Kennedy holding the card here?
Well, you never know when you start guessing about how the Supreme Court's going to rule. And I don't know whether we can really make a good guess of how the court will come out. It is a very contentious issue. But one important thing to remember is if you're a U.S. citizen, or you know, whether it's criminal or civil detention, you always have a right to a hearing. So what the government's defending here is an exceptional rule that would bar even a right to a hearing whether somebody should be released. And I think that's the part where the court's kind of hung up, because this is so inconsistent with our constitutional law not to provide a hearing. And just in this case, Alejandro Rodriguez was held in detention for 3 years without a bond hearing. Ultimately, he was granted a release and is staying lawfully in the country. But there's a lot of people who face long-term detention who throw in the towel and agree to removal, even though they might, in the end, have prevailed if they had been released.
Well, there's a lot of I'm sorry. Please finish your sentence, please. Go ahead.
But ordinarily, you would have a hearing to determine whether somebody's a flight risk or a danger to society. In this case, there's no hearing at all. And some of the errors that we see in some of these cases are quite striking.
Yeah, a lot of this does depend on that decision about who is or isn't a flight risk. But this has a lot of stake in terms of what's going to happen under the Trump administration. I mean, if somebody can be held for months or years even with no hearing, there are pretty wide implications if Trump is going to go ahead with what he says he's going to do and essentially crack down on illegal entries and ramp up deportations.
I think you're exactly right. And he said that he's going to end what he calls catch and release, that is releasing immigrants from custody while removal proceedings are pending. He said he's going to use detention to the fullest extent possible. And the more discretion that the Supreme Court gives him in detaining people, the more likely we're going to see people detained. And this administration, the Obama administration, detained more immigrants than any administration in United States history. So we've seen an upswing in detentions of immigrants as an immigration enforcement tool, and we're likely to see in a Trump administration even more detentions and more detention without bond hearings.
We're talking about the United States Supreme Court considering whether immigrants awaiting hearings can be detained indefinitely, and we do want to hear from you. And in fact, let me give you an opportunity to join the program by telling you the toll-free number that is available to you to join us with any questions or comments you might have. That number is 866-733-6786, and you can join us now. Please feel free to do so. Again, it's 866-733-6786, toll-free. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments or responses you may have, thoughts you may have, onto our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. We're talking to Kevin R. Johnson, Dean and Professor of Law and Chicano Studies at University of California, Davis, and Julie Small, reporter for KQED News, who is at the Supreme Court right now. And Julie, there's kind of a backward equation here. I mean, those who cross illegally and claim asylum are getting a bond hearing, but people who don't cross illegally aren't getting a bond hearing. That's sort of how it shapes up, doesn't it?
Yes, and well, you even have a situation where, depending how you cross illegally, for example, if you just come into the country and you're apprehended 100 miles within the border, you do get a hearing. But if you come to a port of entry and say, I'm seeking asylum, you don't get a hearing. And that's one of the arguments the ACLU put forward and said this is inconsistent. And we just want you to apply the same rules. And we'd like to see that happen nationally, because what's happening right now is every circuit has a different rule. And you have states like Texas where there's no limit on the length of detention at all.
The government did appeal this case, though, to the Supreme Court, because they said it's actually compelled, that is, the government's compelled by congressional statute to detain certain non-citizens until they can be removed.
That's right. It is a very clear statute, and both sides say that it's clear in the language that, you know, these people shall be detained, people who are living here illegally but commit a certain crime. There's a list of crimes that if you commit them, you're deportable. That's one group.
Yeah, no, I think we're getting a picture of what you're talking about. I want to go to our callers and emailers. And again, you can join us toll free right now at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. Here, Skip, who writes, it seems most of these foreign people are being detained voluntarily. Any one of them will quickly be released merely by uttering 5 words, I will leave the country. They did come here voluntarily. They accepted detention voluntarily. They can leave voluntarily as well. Dean Johnson?
Well, that's exactly true, but it's missing some of the point. Some of these immigrants who are put into custody are eligible for relief and to stay in the United States. Some class members, for example, are fleeing persecution and are eligible for asylum under our laws. They come here, they apply for asylum, they do so at a port of entry, and they're put into indefinite detention. And sometimes very serious errors are made in the process. For example, one class member was from Ethiopia. He faced persecution in Ethiopia, and he filed a claim for asylum. He was held in custody, and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement people said they would not be released because they weren't sure of the identity of somebody from Somalia. He was not given a hearing, wasn't able to clarify the fact that he was from Ethiopia, not Somalia, and that he was in a whole different sort of ballpark than that. Very basic errors aren't corrected if you don't have a hearing. So I think it is important to have a hearing.
But the fact of the matter is, and let me just get your take on this, Kevin Johnson, the Supreme Court could make bond hearings mandatory nationwide. I mean, there's, according to the Department of Homeland Security, there's no such requirement.
Well, there is a requirement generally that there be bond hearings. And there's a very well-known tenet under constitutional law that you interpret statutes reasonably they don't violate the Constitution. Holding somebody without a hearing when they haven't been convicted of a crime is...
No, it's against present law. It's an opposition to law that exists presently.
Yes, and there's a series of cases that say you have to have a hearing if you can hold somebody civilly, for example, because of mental issues, or criminally, for example, because of crime issues. Here's a situation where people are being held when there's no evidence they're a risk to public safety or that they're in any way likely to flee if released from custody. And that's contrary to our fundamental notions of constitutional protections. And the question is, are these groups of people going to be treated differently than others who are enjoying constitutional protections? I do agree they can agree to voluntary removal. They can throw in the towel and say, I'm not going to pursue my asylum claim. I'm not going to pursue my cancellation of removal claim. But those are claims created by Congress. And so it's not necessarily the case. It's a good thing that people give up on claims that Congress created for them. In fact, we want a system where they have their day in court and not be discouraged from pursuing their claims by the lack of a bond hearing.
That could put serious limitations ultimately on President-elect Trump if he wants to pursue what he's rhetorically said he's going to pursue.
I think that this case has increased significance given Donald Trump's election. He's taken a very extreme position, at least in his public platform on immigration. In particular, he's said he's going to use detention to the maximum extent that he can. And so the more discretion you give the executive branch, the more detentions you're likely to see under President Trump. And it remains to be seen whether, in fact, he'll carry through on his promises. But he's at least made these promises and been very explicit in making them.
Let me go to our callers. We begin, Sergio, with you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I just had a question. I'm using common sense here. Someone coming into this country illegally, that's considered a crime, shouldn't it? And also, why are we spending so much of our tax money trying to deport these people? Why don't we legalize them and have them work and pay taxes instead? We're all aliens to this country, and I mean, I came here 26 years ago. I applied for permanent residence, and I got approved with my family 26 years ago. So, you know, instead of spending all these tax money, why don't we just legalize these people, and if there's some that have committed worse crimes, have them deported?
Well,
I'll take your answer off the air.
All right. That's sort of an editorial opinion and something that's been bandied about in many forum programs. But you want to weigh in here, Dean Johnson?
Well, certainly. I mean, some of these members of the class are, in fact, legal immigrants. Alejandro Rodriguez came here, was brought here by his parents when he was very young, came here legally, is a lawful permanent resident for 20 years, and was convicted of relatively minor crimes. We're not talking about some kind of path to legalization for somebody here without documentation. We're talking about somebody who's been a long-term member of our community, and the question is whether, because of the crimes he's committed, can he be removed from the country? And ancillary to that is, should he be held in custody while we're processing his removal possibilities? And so it's not all about undocumented immigrants. And some of the class members are come here, apply for asylum, and may be eligible for relief. So, in fact, most of the class isn't composed of undocumented immigrants. Ordinarily, they would, in fact, agree to voluntary departure because they don't have the kinds of claims for relief or removal. Some of them do, but many of them don't. So what we're talking about is lawful permanent residents, legal immigrants who have stake in the community, who are likely to appear at their hearing, who, unless they've been convicted of very serious crimes, are unlikely to pose a risk to public safety, and they're being subject to detention, according to the briefs, on the average of 4 years while their claims are being processed. And they're being held 4 years without a hearing. And yes, detention is expensive, and that's probably a reason why you should think about bonding some of them out of custody if they're likely to show up and they're not a dangerous community. No. But it's not all cases of immigration are cases about undocumented immigrants. And in fact, this case involves many lawful permanent residents who are members of our community who are being held in detention without a bond hearing.
And of course, the sanctuary, the whole question of sanctuary plays into this in a major way as well, where citizens are concerned. But Julie Small, you want to say something here?
Oh, I just wanted to add that also the rest of the class members, the ones that came here seeking asylum, the ones that are subject to detention are ones that actually pass an initial test that says they have a credible fear of persecution if they go home. So we're treating them, we're locking them up without an opportunity for a hearing when their claims are further along and they are more likely to prevail than other people who have been deported.
But about a third of them
are the ones that are most likely to prevail.
Understood. But about a third of them disappear, I mean, before the next court date, and there can be more criminal activities during the time that they're caught up with, or if they're caught up with, and that presents another major problem. But Julie, let me go back to you, because I know you reported about this whole surge in asylum seekers from coming up from Central America, especially the southwest border, a lot of families with children. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing from immigration that it's on the increase again. The surge is continuing. You know, they predicted in 2015 that this was going to drop off, that people were going to be deterred by the tough immigration policies that the U.S. had adopted and the policy of detaining families. They decided it sort of became the de facto rule that they were going to detain any family that crossed over. But that didn't work. People are still coming. In fact, the head of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, just issued a statement in November saying that right now there's so many people coming, they're holding 10,000 more people in detention than they normally do. There's been a huge jump just since August. And he's actually ordered ICE officials to look for more detention facilities, expand that ability to hold people.
I just want to read a comment from Rick, who says, I wonder if the ACLU sanctuary cities or anyone else could be found liable when an illegal commits violent crimes while free during the very long periods before a court date. So sad to hear about these families that suffer at the hands of violent felons released onto our streets. And I'm going to go to another caller. Eric, that's you. Good morning.
Yes, Michael. Good morning. I'm going to kind of flip this over a little bit. I know what has happened. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal 2 years ago as to what would happen to an American in Tijuana who was caught with Vicodin pills that were not prescribed by a Mexican physician. They were put in jail and pretty much keys thrown away. I would also ask your audience, the guest speakers, what would happen to an American that's caught in Mexico working illegally down there? I mean, one reason I think Trump has been elected is because we have a naive attitude towards things here, and we always look at things, you know, one way for us and never looking at what happens on the other side.
You want to comment on that double standard as the caller presented it, Kevin Johnson?
First, I like to emphasize that not all immigrants are from Mexico. So just because Mexico has particular laws and rules of laws doesn't mean that we should try to replicate Mexico and how we treat people. Immigrants come from all over the world. In fact, the largest sending country of immigrants today is China, not necessarily Mexico. So it's a misnomer. It's a mistake. It's a stereotype. It's an error to characterize or suggest or intimate in the least that all immigrants are from Mexico. And it's something that's deeply embedded in many Americans' minds, but it's an error that's very profound. I do think that we are a nation of laws. We are a nation that has a constitution. We take those rights and those laws seriously, and we have an independent judiciary that applies those laws. We have an executive branch that administers those laws. And we should take pride in the fact that we have those laws and we abide by them. We shouldn't say that our laws should be diluted, watered down, because other countries don't honor the same kinds of rights that we do. So I think that's a mistake. I don't know if we have a naive view about immigration or immigrants generally. I do think that some of our actions go beyond and don't necessarily help in enforcement of those laws and actually add cost to the public system. And increased detention is one of those places where we're paying an awful lot of money. It's not clear to me there's much benefit. We put a lot of money in border enforcement in recent years, deported large numbers of people, but we still have a fair undocumented immigrant population. So I don't think that we should instantly say that because they do it in Iceland this way, we should do it that way.
And again, Kevin R. Johnson is Dean and Professor of Law and Chicano Studies at the University of California at Davis. I wonder what you say, Dean Johnson, to a listener named Linda who writes, I was taught that anyone with feet on the U.S. soil was guaranteed the same rights as U.S. citizens. Hasn't that changed?
I don't think it's ever been right.
No, I don't think so either.
Or correct. And one of the things that you don't have if you're not a citizen is if citizens can't be deported, non-citizens can be deported. It's a very fundamental difference, and the rights vary immensely among different kinds of immigrants and U.S. citizens. So it's really not quite correct. I mean, we have in the last 50 years increasingly recognized the rights of immigrants in our law, but I don't think it's fair to say that the rights of citizens are the same as the rights of non-citizens.
There's a question from Kurt who writes, I don't think you're talking about immigrants. An immigrant is a foreigner with a green card or an immigrant visa. The class of people you're talking about are foreigners or aliens, many lacking any permission to even be present in the United States. Why don't you just say that? Why can't they wait for their hearing date in their own countries? That would resolve the issue, wouldn't it? Julie Small, we're getting a good deal of confusion about who's being detained. Are some of the people being detained here legally?
Yes.
Who are here legally?
Most of the class are legal permanent residents. A lot of them were brought here as infants. They've lived here their whole lives. The other part of the class is people coming to the border who are not legally here, but they've made a claim for asylum.
Let me ask you also, Julie, because I know you did some reporting on, I want to get into conditions in immigrant detention. You were down in Texas. What kind of conditions are we talking about?
Well, these are very austere facilities. I reported on a family detention facility named Carnes in Carnes, Texas, where they were detaining 1,000 or so members of family units. You know, activists would describe to me it's gray. It's like a jail. It's like a prison. It really doesn't function differently. There's lockdown. Every aspect of your life is regimented, and we're talking about, you know, a jail-like condition for children. And I think that gets lost sometimes in this discussion that, a lot of people believe that a child being detained even for one day can do irreparable damage.
There's also another element that I want to touch on when you talk about problems we have in this whole picture that we're presenting here this morning. The ACLU, for example, has pointed out that the federal government's numbers are not only misleading, but greatly inflated. And there's concern over data that's supplied to the Supreme Court. I mean, you've got that Demore case back in 2003. I think I have the right name. There was a mandatory detention, and during the deportation proceedings, it turned out that the data was wrong. And the data now, according to the Department of Justice, is, for example, they talked about 4 months being the average incarceration when it's perhaps over a year. Julie, can I get your take on this?
Well, yeah, the Supreme Court made a decision in this case, DeMoore, because in part they didn't want to set a limit on the detention if the length of the detention was reasonable. And at the time they were told, oh, the person might be detained a couple of months or 3 months. And so they didn't want to enact a hard and fast rule about it. But it turns out that that information was incorrect and it's people are being detained a lot longer.
And what if Kevin Johnson, Margaret writes, a foreigner is wrongfully detained? For example, he's confused with someone else. It seems the risk could be high, especially under the incoming administration.
There have been errors in detention. There have been errors in governmental databases. In fact, those databases, the information the government often collects, are an error. That's one of the problems. And so that's the reason why it's important to have a hearing to make sure they have the right person in custody who is being detained for the right reasons.
Well, you got 400,000 detained each year. That in itself would lead to some serious confusions in identity and other kinds of confusions, I presume.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And some of the very basic errors, like the asylum applicant I mentioned, who was from Ethiopia, but they thought he's from Somalia, could be corrected with 2 minutes in court, and his liberty wouldn't be deprived wrongfully. And I think it's very important that we make sure that our government is held accountable when they detain people, detain residents, including legal immigrants in our communities. And a relatively modest few minutes in court in a bond hearing is a very minimal cost and an important protection for ensuring against wrongful detentions of people who shouldn't be in custody.
Well, let me thank both of you for this segment. Julie Small, again, reporter, KQED News, who is at the Supreme Court. And I know you'll stay on the story, Julie, and we will try to as well. Thank you for joining us for this segment.
Thank you, Michael.
And thank you to Kevin R. Johnson, Dean and Professor of Law and Chicano Studies at University of California, Davis. Appreciate your being with us, Dean Johnson.
It's been a privilege.
And thank you, our listeners. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And we have another hour of forum up ahead. We're going to meet Stanford professor Caroline Winter, who has some things to say about the so-called American Enlightenment, maybe enlightenments. In fact, maybe there was no American Enlightenment. Stay tuned for that. And thank you for joining us for this hour. You can continue this discussion online, kqed.org/forum. I want to thank our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. General manager of KQED is Joanne Wallace. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.